Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Hello again and welcome to Talking Golf Getaways. I'm Mitch, he's Darren. Thanks for making us a part of your regular podcasting routine. We are, of course, on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Player FM, and now, as you know, at the, drumroll, all new golftripx.com, at Golf Trip Experts on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And Darren, where can we find you?
You can find me at Getaways Golf on Twitter, at Golf Getaways on Instagram.
You can find me at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E, throughout the online universe. Darren, to say we're stoked is the understatement of, I'm saying the year. I know we just got past the first quarter.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Today we're talking with Rob Collins. He is the visionary force behind the media darling, Sweetens Cove, out in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. It's one of my favorite places to play. I got to go play about 60 holes over in the course of 24 hours last year. But first, before we get to Rob, we have to give listeners a quick update on a few of the things they can find already on golftripx.com.
Our series on reasons you should visit Alabama for golf travel.
Oh, yeah, man. Mitch, let me tell you, Eric Hart has been doing some great work of talking about Alabama. There's a lot of good golf in Alabama, not just the RTJ Trail, but I mean, just so much golf outside of the RTJ Trail that people don't know about it. So we are doing a series where we're talking about something new about Alabama pretty much every week through this month and the next. And we're going to do some more in the fall. So people definitely have to check that out.
Totally agree. We've also got our partner and good friend, Ryan Ballingy, his report from Play Golf with the Pros in Puerto Rico, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's a great story. And then we've got Ben Grehan. Got the first look at the newly renovated Royal New Kent up in Virginia. You know, we love Mike Strantz. We're going to talk about Mike Strantz on this podcast with Rob, I'm sure. And Ben was one of the first people to tee off on that new renovation and gave us the whole first look. It's really, really a nice story that he did.
Darren, just a quick note. You haven't played Royal New Kent before it reopened, did you?
I have not.
I have. Hello. I have.
Royal New Kent and Stonehouse are the two Strantz courses I have not played yet. I am going to remedy that this August. Actually, when we are down at Sweetens Cove, I am going to take a couple extra days, go up to Virginia while I'm out there in the East and go play those two and finish off my Strantz sweep, so to speak.
Well, cool. I have played both of them, and we'll talk Strantz in a little while with Rob too, because I know he wants to get in on this conversation. Last but not least, for now, on GolfTripX.com, you mentioned Eric Hart before, and he came out with a truly historic list. I mean, there's tons of lists out there, but I have never seen anything like the short list series that Eric is doing.
Oh, man, he talked to people, just industry people, friends, anybody he could possibly find anywhere around the country to put together basically the 100 best short courses, non-full-size 18-hole courses. Sweetens Cove is definitely on that list. It's a six-part series that he's working on. We've got a couple of the parts already up on Golf Trip X, and it's just it's a fun list and really a project that he has poured his heart and soul into. So people should go check that out.
Anywhere in the United States, all 50 states. So
there is actually, his goal was to make sure he listed at least one short course from every state in the country, because there were so many that were kind of underserved and you just didn't know about, so many states that you didn't know about short courses. So he wanted to make sure everybody was represented.
All right. So if you live anywhere and you're claiming that nobody gives you some props, that's no longer an excuse. All right. Speaking of short courses, we want to jump right into talking about Sweetens Cove. Our guest, as we said, Rob Collins of King Collins Design, especially because it will be the host to our first ever Sweetens Cove shootout. And again, the word stoked comes up. August 23rd and 24th, if you haven't signed up yet, spots still available at golftripx.com. And here is just one quick note on why you may want to join us, as if being around Darren and I isn't enough, which obviously it is. I was checking out some stuff knowing that we were going to be talking to Rob. Listen to this. Golf Week ranked Sweetens Cove at number 50 on its 2018 Best 100 Courses You Can Play list, which is great in and of itself. It's ahead of some of the best-known courses in the United States. Check this out. Ahead of Harbortown. Courses like Valhalla, Hazeltine, Quail Hollow, Crooked Stick, Erin Hills. Major championships, tour events. Remember, we are talking about the nine holes at Sweetens Cove. Wow. If this were me, and I were Rob Collins, which I'm not, and I had a hat on, my head would be so big right now that it would be impossible to contain it. Rob, welcome to Talking Golf Getaways.
Thanks. It's great to be here. That's a good intro.
Hey, Rob, we're going to talk a lot about what makes Sweetens so fun and the design process and the story of you and your partner, Tad King, how you guys ended up there. But I wanted to start out with kind of how our Sweetens Cove shootout event came to be. And that was with this incredible offer that you guys made at the beginning of the year to buy out the course. I mean, you just basically put it out there and said, hey, bring a group and come get the course for the entire day, which a lot of facilities, if they're bigger, 18-hole courses, they don't do. I know so many groups took advantage of this, including us. In fact, we had trouble finding the right dates because you had so many people that were taking advantage of it. And when I saw the price, I said to myself, look, we got to get 30, 40, 50 of our friends and just take this place over for a couple of days. What do you think it is about Sweetens that makes it the perfect spot for buyout events?
Well, it really is the absolute perfect way to experience the golf course, primarily because playing it one time for nine holes just isn't enough. And if you can have the experience of having a golf course to yourself, that's a pretty unique and fun thing. And that's really something that we try to do for people that are coming out for those type of events is, you know, we want them to feel like it's their golf course and they can just do whatever they want. I mean, I encourage you guys to, you know, play cross country holes, do whatever. I mean, if you want to play the golf course backwards all day long, you can. I mean, you guys can do whatever you want. So, you know, it's just part of the whole mindset at Sweetens Cove, I think, is one reason why it works well. It also works well because there's so much variety in those nine holes that you're always going to be getting a different look. And, you know, particularly with two pins out, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do, a lot of different games you can play, like we did at the Ringer a couple weeks ago, where each nine has a different game associated with it. And then there's all the cross country holes that Patrick and all our members found. You know, there's 70 holes or something. Who knows how many holes are out there? I don't know how many holes are out there. There's a bunch, but those are the kinds of things you can do when you rent the course for a day and just have your own group. And that's a lot of fun.
You know, we're excited about kind of planning this event. Certainly Zach Blair, who you mentioned, his hip event, the Ringer, has really amped the profile for Sweetens Cove. And we kind of want our Sweetens Cove shootout to be maybe the everyman's Ringer for people who are, you know, suffering FOMO while they watch all the social media from Zach and you and all the buddies and the no laying up guys, you know, who descend on that place. And I just did recently, and I guess the Ringer is a couple times a year now, isn't it?
Yeah, we did one in the fall, and then we did one in the spring, and we're trying to sort out a date for this coming fall. So the thing about the Ringer is people get done on Sunday and then they're like, when's the next one? Is it next week? I mean, can we do it again tomorrow? It's that much fun. Zach's vision behind the whole event and the way they set it up is perfect. And the camaraderie and everything it's just as much fun as you can ever have. I mean, I've never been more excited on a golf course than I was when Tron hit that shot in the hole-in-one shootout that we thought went in, but it hit the stick there for a minute. We all thought that he had his second hole-in-one in 2 days, and that was as excited as I've ever been. And that's just kind of the whole thing is like that. So it's really awesome.
Well, there's some great video out there from that as well. And that's what we're hoping to do with the shootout in August. You know, we've got so many people have signed up already. Mitch and I are going to bring all kinds of things that we love, not only the Hickory Clubs, which we both play, but sticky toffee cookies, sortilage, Canadian maple whiskey, some type of signature milkshake I've yet to finalize. And then we've got prizes from Tobacco Road, Caledonia, and True Blue that we'll be giving away, and all designed by our architectural hero Mike Strantz. So we're excited about it, and it just seems like such a wonderful place. I played it all by myself those 60 holes the first time I was there. I can't wait to be there and play it with a group of people who I know and love and just love being on the golf course with.
Yeah, that'll be a blast. And the fact that you played 60 holes and didn't get bored says everything that people need to know, that you guys are going to have a great time squeezing as many as you can.
I have a feeling there'll be some records broken. That's just my thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just my thought, because we'll go, we'll carry flashlights and cell phones. We'll try to see if we can play. Maybe, Darren, what we should do is just start the first morning and do the whole 2 days. And never sleep, and just keep going.
Continuously for 48 hours?
Yeah.
I like that, Mitch.
What's the diff, man? We'll get those days back later. Who cares?
Exactly.
Speaking of Strands, Rob, and obviously Darren and I love, we talk about him all the time here on the podcast. Tell us how he and maybe some other architects you admire helped shape what Sweetens Cove has become, because as just a 9-hole course and an out-of-the-way location, dare I say it's a maverick design in its own right.
He had a huge influence on me, as I've said in a few other forums before. And, you know, you bringing him up reminds me of a story. One of the first times we had any media out there was Ron Witten. And this was before the golf course even opened. And I remember exactly where we were. We were coming around the behind number 8 green, right by number 9 tee. And Ron said, "You know, Rob, I hope this doesn't, you know, bother you, me saying this, but, you know, this, I see a lot of Tobacco Road in this golf course." And I was like, that's like the most awesome compliment ever. I love Tobacco Road. And, I wish I'd had an opportunity to get to know Mike Strantz. He's one of my design heroes. I think he just is a total visionary, and, you know, the risks that he took and that he successfully pulled off at Tobacco Road were a huge influence on me and the way I thought about architecture. I've always been a person who wanted to think about things a little bit differently, but seeing Tobacco Road made me realize how differently you could think about things. And I've always felt like there's too many rules and constraints that architects place on themselves. And I wanted to break away from, you know, those kind of self-imposed rules that you often see in modern architecture. And then going to Tobacco Road and you see how freely Mike Strantz discarded those rules, it really opened my mind up to the possibilities that are out there in architecture. And that's one of the things that makes golf design so much fun for me, I think. And we definitely implemented a lot of Strantzian, Tobacco Roadish kind of things into the golf course with some of the blind or semi-blind shots and, you know, some of the bold contouring. Those are all things that, if I hadn't seen Tobacco Road, I don't know if I'd had the guts to try it.
Did you ever get to meet him at all?
No, I didn't. No, I wish I had.
Yep. Well, the great thing about what we all do is that we get to deal with him all the time. Still.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's the way I look at it. Every time, and Darren knows this too, every time we go to Tobacco Road, and I live in Myrtle Beach, so I play Caledonian True Blue a lot, I feel like he's there. It's the only way to say it. I really feel like he's still there. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, he lives on through those amazing creations of his, and that's become a living tribute. So that's really cool.
Your story, we won't get into the entirety of it here, but it's an inspiring one in a way. You did, or you were kind of forced by circumstances at the time into doing what many of us dream about, taking a huge risk, essentially buying, running your own golf course exactly the way you want it. Tell the listeners who might not be familiar with it how you went from renovating Sequatchie Valley to, figuratively speaking, being the chief cook and bottle washer at Sweetens Cove just to keep it afloat.
Yeah, well, it's I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version, but you know, basically what happened was is Tad and I were hired in 2011 to redo this old country golf course in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee, called Sequatchie Valley Golf and Country Club. It's dead flat, 72 acres on heavy clay soils, but it sat in a beautiful location, and we were fortunate to have a client who basically gave us carte blanche and let us do whatever we wanted, within a budget, of course, but as far as the vision and, you know, boldness and things, I mean, he really let us go, which we were very fortunate to have. And he believed in what we were doing, and we got the golf course built and grassed out in 2012. The family that owned it, decided after about a year of, kind of holding on to it that they needed to, you know, get back to their core business, which was concrete manufacturing. And in August of 2013, they approached me and said, you know, we're going to get out of this and wonder if you'd like to take it over on a long-term lease. And I ended up deciding to do that. And I met Ari Techner, the owner of Scratch Golf, now one of the partners in National Custom Works, a really awesome club company that Patrick Boyd's involved with. And we ended up signing the lease in 2014, which meant that we kind of held the keys to the property. And we brought on some other partners later on. And it was a real struggle for the first, you know, 4 or 5 years. It was, we did not even come close to breaking even. We just had bandaged together kind of with duct tape and, you know, coat hanger here and there. I mean, it was, you know, like MacGyver trying to hold the thing together, and somehow, some way we got through, and we're now in a position where the golf course has a secure future. But it was very insecure and precarious for quite a long while. The thing that really catapulted it was the New York Times article in I guess that was July of 2017.
Correct.
And you know, that since then we've really seen a nice upward trajectory on the revenues and everything. And then of course, the advent of social media, we would have not made it out of a half a season if it hadn't have been for Twitter and Instagram. I mean, that was our way to reach the public, and it's just kind of grown in a very natural and organic way. And, you know, one of the interesting things is it was all just about putting one foot in front of another. I mean, there was no bullshit. There was no fluff. We were selling a great golf course, and that's it. You know, that we didn't have any other amenities. And I think that the authenticity of that resonated with a certain segment of the golfing population, and it resonated in a very strong way. And we've seen these true believers come out of the woodwork, and they've sustained us, and we're very grateful for that.
And it's paid off in a big way, like you said, financially. Now, you have some pretty high profile names that have joined as an investment group to come in and help with the future, right?
Yeah, that's the big news. I'm still kind of in a daze about things, really. I was approached in probably, I'd say, September or October, about September last year, by a guy named Mark Rivers. He's a developer based primarily out of California. He approached me about another project. He and his partner, Skip Bronson, have done a lot of really cool work all over the country. And Mark and I struck up a friendship and in a really good relationship. And I realized pretty early on that they weren't only interested about the, you know, this other project they were talking to me about, but they started getting interested in the possibility of getting involved with Sweetens Cove. And that conversation progressed, and early this year, we signed a deal with them, which was, you know, a huge relief to have the golf course finally secure. I mean, we were never well capitalized. I mean, when we signed the deal, it was like, we're just going to try to keep this thing alive until we can get, you know, a real investor involved, somebody with deeper pockets who can, you know, kind of help us realize the full vision of the place. And so we always knew we needed somebody like Mark and Skip, and they are the ultimate, you know, perfect partners. And they also brought along with them Tom Nolan, who's a, you know, very well connected guy in the golf business, a lot of business background, and Mark's good friends with Andy Roddick. And Andy joined the group, which is really, really exciting. And then the fifth partner that they surprised me with is without question the most popular person in the history of the state of Tennessee, Peyton Manning. And you know, Patrick and I for a year, Patrick Boyd, the longtime GM at Sweetens Cove, and I for many years had said, God, if we could ever get Peyton involved. And Peyton and I have a mutual friend, and Peyton was, you know, aware of the golf course, but it was just kind of a what if we ever got Peyton involved. And then when Mark and Skip and Tom and Andy were able to pull that off, that was just an unbelievable surprise and just really exciting to have him on board as part of the group. So I couldn't be happier. I mean, the first night when they surprised me at dinner, I thought I was going to meet Tom and Mark for dinner, and in walks Tom and Peyton Manning. You know, and I was telling Peyton and Tom and Mark at dinner, I was like, you know, this is incredibly exciting for me. But I want you guys to know that I'm carrying with me, with this excitement, I'm also carrying the weight of, you know, 5 years of stress of keeping this place open. And I told him the story about the time that when I was maintaining the golf course by myself through the winter of 2014 and 15, and Patrick was working for free in the shed until we were able to get some money to pay him. And he and I went out on the fifth green and were picking Poana out of the green just so we could get another pin placement. The whole green was eaten up with weeds, and we didn't have a chemical budget. We didn't have anything. We had to like go hand pick for like 5 hours Poana out of the greens. And, you know, to go from that position in like November, December of 2014 to be sitting in a restaurant with Peyton Manning in Chattanooga is pretty wild journey.
So all the people that think that's an overnight success story.
No.
I mean, that's yeah, always the thing that amazes me, is these kinds of things where you go, okay, you splash in a big way when Peyton or when the course gets ranked number 50 or whatever. But the 5 years before and stories like that are truly what are amazing and really what makes the place, gives the place its pardon this word, but its spirituality, because it's not about that stuff.
Yeah, no, it's there's been a lot of effort and blood, sweat, and tears put into it by a number of talented and passionate people, and all of that energy that's gone into it, you know, I always say is reflected back to people, and you sense that and experience that when you're on property, and I think that resonates with people. I mean, we're not selling something that's phony or fake or just in any way. I mean, it's all very real and authentic. And I think that's, you know, one of the main reasons we've been successful. I mean, backtracking a little bit, I'd be remiss not to mention and thank Golf Week for, you know, getting us on the ranking. That was huge. I mean, it's one thing for an 18-hole golf course to be ranked in the top 100 modern in the United States, but for a 9-hole golf course to be ranked, it's especially important because we have to accept the fact that there still is a stigma attached to 9-hole golf in a lot of people's minds. And when, you know, people walk into this Home Depot shed with a portalette out there and, you know, zero amenities. And, you know, this happens a lot. I mean, we would have people who just didn't know, and they'd be like, $55 to play nine holes. And we're like, check out the list, Holmes. You know, we're rated ahead of Valhalla. Cough it up. You know, you're lucky we're not charging you $200.
You're darn right.
And so that was a really validating thing for us. And it mattered. I mean, people ask me occasionally, like, how much do you care about the Golf Week ranking? I'm like, I care a hell of a lot about the Golf Week ranking. It matters. One of the best, if not the most well-respected rankings, because they really focus on the architecture. They're not focused on the comfort stations and all that stuff. I mean, they're just looking at the golf course, and that's why it's ranked. But it is a validation of what we did. And what's so funny too is it's kind of incongruent, you know, to have a top 100 golf course that has zero amenities. I mean, you're just not used to that. And right. So that's kind of part of the lore of Sweetens Cove too, is like, you've got this, like, one of the best golf courses in the country, yet you have nothing else. And, and that's, you know, that was like a huge weakness for the first couple of years. But as the golf course got more and more popular, it strangely flipped and became a strength. And we never added to any of the amenities. Like, people would always be like, when are you going to build a clubhouse? Like, stroke us a $2 million check and we will, you know, I mean, we don't have any money. I mean, you're just be glad that you're out here playing, you know?
Let me ask about that then, because, I mean, I get the no amenities. I think the best description of Sweetens Cove I heard of all the research I've done and people talking about is, when you were on Derek Duncan's Feed the Ball podcast, he compared Sweetens to a hip underground club. And you've got the Home Depot shack as the clubhouse that you've mentioned. You've got this full minimalist experience. You know, a lot of people love it because it's a place you just show up and play. There's no glitz, there's no glamour. How do you square that with an influx now of capital and new investors, and what are the expansion plans that come from having some money and being able to do some things? What might be different or better about Sweetens Cove by the time we and our friends show up in August?
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that has been a discussion that has gone over and over and over between me and Mark Rivers about, and my wife and I have had this discussion many times, me and Patrick and Tad and everyone who's got an interest in seeing Sweetens Cove be successful. For the longest time, you know, I'd say 2015, 2016, let's call it pre-New York Times article, it was no amenities was like a huge liability for us, because people didn't fully understand, or most people didn't fully understand or respect what we had done out there. And not having the amenities really, really hurt. And then after the New York Times article, like I said, it started to become a strength, and that was not planned. It just happened. It was always just about putting one foot in front of the other. And so all of a sudden we've got this weird strength in having a shed as our clubhouse and like no amenities and all this stuff. And so, you know, Mark and everyone else, we were always concerned that if we all of a sudden start adding stuff, it's going to actually subtract from what Sweetens Cove is. So the answer is that we're going to tread very, very lightly with respect to the amenities. I mean, we are going to have indoor plumbing, which will be nice. the best description I can give of and we're still formulating these plans, we don't have anything concrete yet, but would to be do something somewhat similar to Ben's porch at Sandhills, you know, where you've got a nice deck and a porch and a, you know, maybe at Sweetens Cove we'll have a fire pit, place to hang out where people can actually sit and watch people come in on nine, watch people tee off on one, just kind of a really cool outdoor space pavilion where there's somebody, you know, can cook you a really good hamburger. But nothing, you know, nothing elaborate or over the top, just a really cool place to hang out. We're going to build a really cool putting green adjacent to that, right by the first tee, where people can putt, and I was talking to Mark about it yesterday. I think we ought to do like a, just a really badass, like Himalayas putting green. I think that would be very fitting for Sweetens Cove. And then we're actually going to keep the shed. The shed is going to be a permanent fixture at Sweetens Cove. We're not, that'll be where you continue to check in. There's discussions about some possible lodging, but we're going to, if we do that, we're going to dip our toes into that, you know, at a very gradual pace. We don't want to get too far out in front of ourselves. And then there's discussion of potentially doing like a cradle type of short course on the driving range area. There's about 10 or 15 acres that are available just kind of to the, if you're playing number nine, like to the left of number nine, or if you're standing up at the shed off to your right, you know, it'd be kind of fun to add a really cool par three kind of cradle type of golf course, like the one at Pinehurst there. You know, that's about it as far as infrastructure is concerned. I mean, we need to, you know, get rid of the sand piles up at the top of the hill and, you know, maybe do some simple landscaping and stuff like that. But we're going to keep it, you know, try not to lose the authenticity, and we're going to tread very lightly with all that stuff.
I love the idea that there's going to be a shorter course.
Yeah.
It's so fantastic. When you said that just now about the cradle, because all the other stuff makes total sense. When you said that about the cradle, and I'm going, okay, you're talking about a nine-hole golf course that's now going, okay, we're going to have an even shorter course that's fun and great.
Yeah.
And I thought, what an amazing concept. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun. I mean, if, you know, let's say that in time there is some lodging. I mean, that could be a fun way for people to, you know, go out and play a quick, you know, loop or on a 800 yard golf course or whatever, you know, whatever it works out to be, or, you know, just a kind of a breath of fresh air. So I think those are, you know, those are things that could be really fun. Just go out there and build, and it might not be nine holes. I mean, we might build 12 greens. Maybe we build nine double greens, or I don't know what. I mean, I'm kind of working through the thoughts on that right now, but it'll have a very similar look and feel, and a bunch of wild green complexes that you can hit a bunch of different shots around will be the main focus.
Well, given that South Pittsburgh is not a thriving megalopolis, all this stuff is going to be great as it builds out for people to actually hang. I mean, that's what it sounds like. Just someplace you can go for 2 or 3 days and get away from everything and play the kind of golf we're talking about.
That's right. Yep.
We mentioned the New York Times article, and I really want to give a shout out to Dylan DeCher for that article. I read it. It's a fantastic piece of writing. One of the things I loved about it, this was in 2017. For those of you listening, just go to New York Times and Google Sweetens Cove, New York Times, because you don't want to Google Dylan DeCher, because his name, his last name is nothing like DeCher. It's actually DeTHIER, but it's pronounced DeCher. But really, really a wonderful piece on you and a great feature profile. But one of the things that I loved, there were a couple of quotes in there. One that I loved was he describes you in that article as 6 feet 6 inches of unyielding self-assurance, which to me was one of the great immediate descriptive phrases I've ever heard.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. My brother, who's 9 years older than me, has given me a rash of shit about that line and ribbed me about it pretty well.
What, did he think you paid Dylan to write it? I mean,
no, just like, oh yeah, you know, 6 feet 6 inches of unyielding self-assurance. You know, I mean, just as a big brother, you know, does. I mean, just, you know, kind of ribbing me about it a little bit. But that was that was really funny how that all came about. I've known Dylan since he wrote 18 in America. Uh-huh. I played golf with him when he came through Chattanooga. My brother went to college at Williams where he ended up going to college, and that's how I got put in touch with him. And so I've known him since he was, you know, 18 years old. And he's just an incredibly brilliant guy. And, when, if you read 18 in America, you're like, a 19-year-old wrote this? I mean, this, how is that? Right. It's like, you think it's F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote
it. So
you're
thinking he's the Zion Williamson of writers, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, he's an amazing talent.
Yeah.
And so Dylan was always interested in the story of Sweetens Cove. He was actually there on opening day in 2014. He was there in 2012 when we were grassing it. He came through on a trip, a college golf trip. He and his buddy stopped by. So he had seen the course at all these different stages. He knew that we had taken it over, and he and I always stayed in contact. And he's like, you know, I really want to write a story about this one day and just kind of tell the whole story. And I'm like, sure, man. And I was thinking that, you know, he'd get it in Golf Digest or, which was, is great, or Golf Magazine or something like that. And, those are great publications, but he said, you know, I'm going to shoot for the stars and try to get it in the New York Times. And I'm just like, okie doke, you know, go for it, man. You know? And so I still have the voicemail on my phone when he called me and to let me know that he had gotten it in the New York Times. I mean, you know, talk about being excited. I mean, oh God, that was huge.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how big that was.
Yep.
It saved the golf course, straight up.
Well, that's a pretty, that statement right there pretty much tells it all. Let me take another phrase. Darren and I had mentioned this. Darren let me know about this before I actually had read the article. You were quoted saying, and this is the 6'6" of unyielding self-assurance coming through. You were quoted in the article as saying people had been building golf courses completely wrong for years. And I know that just from reading other things that you and Tad had discussed what was wrong before setting out to change it after the recession and such. But what were the circumstances that led you two together to change that, to really feel like in your own way you were going out to say, okay, we recognize this and now we're going out to change it? How does the partnership work in terms of bringing something like Sweetens Cove to life?
Tad and I met in about 2006 on a big budget project down in Florida that I was working on as a design coordinator for the player group. And he was working for the contractor. And, you know, I was killing myself to uphold the vision of the design associate from the player group. You know, I was gung-ho and green and wanted to do a good job. And I pretty quickly realized that there was a dynamic between the design side of things and the contractor side of things where things didn't always match up, and both sides didn't necessarily have the same vision or ideals and so forth. And I felt like, and Tad felt this as well, that when the design and construction aren't on the same page necessarily, it's the thing that suffers is the final product of the golf course. And we felt like that bringing design and construction under one umbrella as a design build firm would allow us to have total artistic control over our work and, you know, total control of basically the whole process. And that would be a way for us to, you know, elevate, you know, the product and do things that, you know, that dynamic between architect and contractor sometimes doesn't allow. And so when we got the Sequatchie Valley Sweetens Cove job, it was a total in-house design build. Our client, as I said, had a concrete manufacturing company. They had a lot of their own, you know, laborers and equipment and sand, thank God, that we were able to use. And you know, the client gave us, you know, some of the, you know, all the materials and the machines and things you actually need to like build a golf course. And so, you know, we went about, doing this, and the cool thing about the process with Sweetens Cove is that, you know, I was able to, and Tad was able to, you know, work through the process on the fly as it matured. I mean, there's things that happen in construction where, you know, maybe the best laid plans change a little bit and you have to be flexible and deal with those in a fluid situation and just take advantage of what's coming out of the ground and be able to recognize that, oh, hey, maybe this over here, it works better as a low and, you know, make a little swale, or maybe this needs to be a high or a bump or a roll or whatever. And, you know, recognizing those opportunities in construction and working through them in a fluid way allows you to really put something interesting in the ground. And, you know, our approach all along was that, you know, every square inch of the property mattered. There wasn't one single detail that didn't matter. You know, the bunker edge for me, I did a lot of the bunker work out there, like the bunker edge on, you know, some island on the back edge of, you know, number three green that nobody was ever going to see was every bit as important to me as like the bunker in front of number nine green that everyone was going to see. And with that attitude, a golf course is basically a culmination of millions and millions of little details. And if every little detail matters as much as every other detail, nothing gets left behind and everything's accounted for. And if you have that mindset through the entire project, then the final result is going to be something that is uncommon, because that's not how golf courses are commonly built. I mean, most people don't care that much, but we do. And that's why Sweetens Cove is as good as it is.
I want to talk a little bit about the golf course itself, obviously, for those specifically who haven't been there to get a taste of it. Technically, there is no fourth hole. On the card, it's just called King in all caps. It's a par three, play somewhat blind to one of the biggest greens I've ever seen in my life. It can play 3 to 4 clubs different depending on the pin placements. I want to know, how does something crazy like that get built? Did you see it from the beginning in your mind? Or is it the shaper or the shapers who kind of take an inkling of an idea and run with it once they're out there moving dirt?
The reason King is named King is it's named after a guy named King Emig, who was a local golfing legend. His dad, Lou Emig, was one of the best amateur players ever in the United States. Just a fantastic player. And I got put in touch with the Thomas family through King. And he was a big part of me, you know, of King Collins getting the job. It's not, King is not, does not have any relation to King Collins. It's a different King. But King tragically died in 2015 too early. And so we decided that we would dedicate that hole to him, because King Emig was actually the first guy I ever toured the property with way back in July of 2010. He and I met at a Crystal and rode around and looked at the golf course, and he said to me, "Man, Rob, it'd be so cool if you could find a place to do a Himalayas hole, you know, with the blind par three." And one day I was out walking around and I saw this, you know, big bare kind of open spot where I thought would be the perfect place for a Himalayas hole. And I called him, I said, "We're going to do it." And he was really excited. As far as the construction goes, it was, you know, again, it was very fluid. We built the ridge between the green and the tees. One thing, going back to the Mike Strantz conversation, that was influential on the fourth hole is the long linear tees that are set out perpendicular to the line of play. You know, kind of like some of the par threes at Tobacco Road. You know, you can play way over from the right side one day or way over from the left side the other day, and that gives you a lot of different angles and variety. So we have these big wide tees, allow you to play from all sorts of angles and distances. And then at the green, that was, you know, maybe the fourth or fifth green that we had done. And we weren't going in order. It just so happened it turned out it was fourth or fifth green. And the shaper, Gus Grantham, and I, by this point in time, were really on the same page. And he understood what we wanted. And I kind of laid out the extent of the green, and he had a really funny line. He just looked at me and he goes, "Rob, just let me go fucking crazy here." And I was like, "Okay, man." And
how can you turn that down?
Yeah, exactly. So he said that to me when, you know, the green site was just piles of mud and this and that, and we kind of knew where the back end and the front end were going to be and the sides and this and that, but it was a really pretty much a blank slate. And you know, Gus shaped it in there, and then, you know, we just tweaked a few little things here and there, and that was that. I mean, and that's the fun part about golf construction is when you have really talented people involved, it's not just one person, it's a lot of talented people, and, you know, you don't constrain people with a lot of talent. You let them show their colors and let them do their thing, and, you know, Gus built an amazing green. It's a great green. And Tad did an amazing job finishing it. I mean, I was looking at a picture on Twitter of it today, and I just, every time I just kind of laugh a little bit. It's just it's a great green. It's wild and fun, and there's so many different ways to play it and so many different things that can happen. It's a good one.
It's such a cool hole from a standpoint of, you know, there are great short game shots around it. If you miss that green, and it's possible to miss it, even though it's ginormous. But I, you know, I should say for the people, we've been, you know, hyping the Sweetens Cove Shootout, but, are the two par threes, King, and then the one, the closer at number nine, are going to be the focal points of our contest. We're going to do a 2-day closest to the pin and give away our big Mike Stranst related prizes for those. And so, there's so much fun and danger all in a single shot. And I think that's just a wonderful point and a point of the golf course. Overall, that fine line between fun and danger, to me, is one of the key aspects of Sweetens Cove.
It is, absolutely. I think that the most interesting golf holes are ones where success and failure reside in very tight and close quarters with one another. I mean, when you kind of have that thin line where you know that there's a potential for disaster, but there's also a little carrot dangling if you hit the right shot. And that's the kind of the psychological dynamic that good golf holes have. And I think that's the thing that makes it fun. And when you succeed, it makes you want to come back. And when you fail, it probably pisses you off a little bit, but it raises the hair up on the back of your neck and makes you want to, I'm going to get that thing next time. So, you know, that's kind of the goal anyway, to challenge you and make you have fun.
I think it helps define who you are as a golfer too, because I think the course is really quite fair. It's hard to lose a golf ball out there. I guess you could hit it in the water six and the Cape hole. But for the most part, you've got to hit a really bad shot to lose a golf ball. But I think there are a lot of safe ways to play the golf course. And if you're a person who's just trying to protect a score, you know, you can hit it to the safe spots and try to let the putter do the work. But if you're a guy who wants to attack and, you know, you want to really try to, you know, pop it in there and make a lot of birdies, you really face either hitting the right shot or some diabolical short game recovery shots. And to me, that's where the fun lies.
That's absolutely true. That's the golf course, you know, encapsulated in a nutshell. I mean, you can definitely get around out there. You know, really high handicappers can go out there and have fun because there's so much width, because it's all short grass around the greens. They can putt from anywhere, basically. But if you really want to score, you're going to have to take on some challenge. And sometimes that can lead to catastrophic consequences. I mean, if you get into the up underneath the boards on number five, you know, on the bunker there, you know, I've made a 10 on that hole before. I've made a 2 on it and I've made a 10, you know, left side of number 7 green, the kind of Pinehurst esque dome green there is one of the most dangerous spots on the course. You could hit that same shot 2 or 3 times if you don't get it all the way up the hill. And, those sorts of situations are what really make it fun.
I think I made everywhere from a 2 to a 9 in my 60 holes.
I believe it. Yeah, absolutely. If you play enough holes out there, that'll happen. I mean, I will be very, very surprised if, at least, especially on number 9, I will be very surprised if a hole-in-one is not your closest to the pin. And you will probably have multiple hole-in-ones. You might be giving out more than one close to the pin contest there.
Uh-oh.
Because I saw there was three in one day in a high school, a girls high school golf tournament there in 2016. Two of them were back to back, and a girl hit another one that was a walk-off ace. So it's, you know, at the Ringer, we had three hole in one. Sully had one on four. Luke Davis had one on, I think he hit his on nine, and Tron hit his on nine. So you'll have a couple hole in ones for sure.
Where's the pin most likely when that happens?
Usually the hole in one pin on nine is off to the left a little bit. There's a slope that comes down, and it's a kind of a nice gathering contour. It gives you more than one way to get at it. And then on four, the back pin's basically impossible. You have to hit a perfect shot. But the front pins are pretty easy. There's a bowl in there, and we see some hole in ones there. We had a hole in one on four today. On the front side, down the front part of the green. So a little pitching wedge probably.
Well, I'm going to give you a little heads up before we get there in August. And a lot of this discussion has been about Mike Stranz and Tobacco Road. Darren was on 18, Darren. Did you have an 11 on 18?
At Tobacco Road?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was something like that. That wasn't like...
Wait. You don't have to qualify. I'm just saying you had a high score.
That wasn't like the golf course's fault. That was the fact. I couldn't read a yardage.
Hey, just listen to me. That's a whole other issue with you. I had a number 11 at Tobacco Road. I had an 18.
Oh, my God.
So your 10 or 9 at Sweetens is, I mean, I'm going for big numbers, Rob.
That's right.
I'm going for big numbers.
I love it. so funny.
The other, before we leave, we have one final question, but before we leave, in listening to you also talk about the start of Sweetens, it really strikes me these kind of mystical connections between you and Mike Stranz and Tobacco Road and there. Isn't it interesting to you, and I'm sure you thought about it before, the connection between a concrete company and Sweetens Cove and Mark Stewart and the company, the gravel company and the sand company that they had at Tobacco Road, how those things to me, when you were talking about it, all of a sudden it hit me that the foundational start for both of those golf courses is eerily the same in a way.
It is. I was surprised and interested to learn that information from Mark. I've gotten to be good friends with Mark, and he's a great guy, and it's they have a similar background, so that was definitely surprising. And you know, I think Mark will tell you that hiring Mike Stranz was the smartest decision they ever made. I mean, if they had just brought in hot architect X, Y, and Z from the mid 90s, I don't think it would be there.
Yeah, it might not be in business anymore.
Right. I mean, and that's not through any fault of theirs, but it's because there would have been another absolutely bland, nothing golf course that is like every other golf course. Then why the hell would you drive to Sanford, North Carolina to play something that's just like the other boring thing that's next to your house? I mean, but because they have this, all world masterpiece of, interesting architecture under their control, they have been very successful, and that's really cool to see.
Yeah, great point. That, and there's Yarborough's ice cream in Sanford too, but that's a whole other story. All right, before we let you go, what's next? We heard on other podcasts you maybe work on something up in New York State. Certainly anyone on social media knows about your relationship. We talked about it earlier with Zach Blair, the quest to build the Buck Club in Utah, which is pretty darn exciting. What's the update? Where will we be able to play the next King Collins design, do you think? Can you share it here? You want to break any news?
I wish I could break some news. We do have a new project going in New York, but our client has asked us to kind of hold off on any PR specifics about it for the time being. We're working on that now, and we're really excited about it. I just came from up there, and it's really going to be something special. I'm super excited about it. As far as other leads, we have, just a ton of leads, upwards of 20, you know, possible new projects, some domestic, some not domestic, some on amazing sandy sites, some not. Each one is interesting in its own way. And it's, you know, I called Sweetens Cove a fruit bearing tree to Tad once in a conversation. And I think that's the best description of it. I mean, if there wasn't Sweetens Cove, we wouldn't have any leads. And it's taken a while, but it's beginning to bear fruit. And, you know, we're finally starting to see the, you know, the new work come our way, which is really cool and exciting.
Boy, talk about a tease, Darren.
Yeah, no doubt. And you've done a lot of work on the Buck Club, even though it's still in the development stages and they're still looking for funding. I know, you know, Zach's been working on that. I can relate to that. Obviously, I'm part of the team at Pacific Gales, which is kind of in the same stage right now. But, you know, just talk just real quickly about kind of that vision for the Buck Club, because I know Zach has been a masterful guy in terms of promoting something that isn't there yet. And I think it's going to be an amazing place if all the pieces come together. But, you know, sometimes it can be a long time for all those pieces to actually come together.
It can. And, you know, credit to Zach. I mean, he truly is. And I don't throw this around lightly. He is truly a genius in marketing and ideas and creating buzz. It's just a natural skill for him. It's amazing watching him create all this interest around the Buck Club. And, you know, there is a specific site that the golf course was designed on. And it's, that's the one we've identified. And, you know, as with Pacific Gales, it all comes down to dollars. And, you know, he's got some good conversations going on with some potential investors / lenders. And, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that it'll happen sooner than later. The design of the golf course is exciting. And again, credit to Zach on that. You know, most of it are his ideas. You know, we bounce things off of each other, and he'll text or call and say, "Hey, I've got an idea for so and so hole," and it's like, "Yeah, it's a great idea." And you know, I think Zach and I are kind of mining from the same well of information, and almost in a strange way kind of share a brain on it. I mean, we like the same things, we dislike the same things, and so when he makes a suggestion, it's 99.9% chance or higher that I'm going to think it's a great idea, and vice versa. And so, you know, he's really put his heart and soul into the vision of this thing, and it's going to happen. I mean, there's absolutely no question in my mind. It's just a matter of time. I mean, he's a force of nature with it. it's going to happen. And when it does, people will be shocked at how good it is. It's not dissident. This is not just some regular old golf course. This thing's going to be truly special.
Well, I have to say, as you say that I have to disagree, because I don't think people are going to be shocked. That's a tribute to you, what you've done at Sweetens, and a tribute to Zach and all the things that he brings to the table too. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, it's there. We definitely, you know, there's going to be some expectations, and we're ready to meet them for sure.
Well, I think what we love about you, Darren's been to Sweetens. As he said, he played 60 holes in 12 minutes. but I can't. If August 23rd was tomorrow, it wouldn't be soon enough for me. That's the only way I can say.
Can't wait for y'all to come out, and we appreciate your guys' support of it. You're gonna have an awesome time.
I know we will. And this has been fascinating. We could go on for a long time. You're gonna be back for our emergency nine, so we'll get to spend some more time with you. But for those of you listening, you can find Rob at King Collins Golf on Twitter and Instagram. check out their appropriately named website. Incredible, kingcollinsgolf.com. Of course, you can follow Sweetens Cove if you're not doing that already. Shame on you. At Sweetens Cove on Twitter and at Sweetens Cove Golf Club on Instagram. Plus, the website is sweetenscovegolfclub.com as well. Darren, this has been off the charts.
It's been great. And we should mention one more time, keep putting in our shameless plugs here. If you want to play Sweetens Cove with the Golf Trip Experts gang and some special guests. We haven't talked much about the special guests, but I have heard a rumor, Mitch, that there is...
Peyton Manning?
No, I don't think Peyton's coming, but close. Another...
Eli Manning?
Speaking of brothers, another gentleman that looks a lot like you is scheduled to appear at Sweetens Cove.
Wait a minute, my twin brother Matt's coming?
That's what I hear.
Nobody told me.
I would assume you would have known that before I would, but
he's a sneaky mother. Oh, boy.
So anyway, you can head on over to golftripx.com. You can sign up for the Sweetens Cove Shootout August 23rd and 24th. That's a Friday and a Saturday. It's just $350 for 2 days of golf. All the golf we can play, plus food, plus goodies, plus prizes. And if you know us, a whole lot of fun.
And that's a capital F on that one. Rob, thanks again so much for being with us. This has been a treat. It really has.
Been a lot of fun to be on. I appreciate you guys having me.
Okay. We're going to have Rob back, as I said, on our Emergency 9 golf travel quiz in the next episode. We will grade him on his responses. This is when you get to Rob's point now, nobody really grades you. They know about Sweetens. Darren and I are going to grade him.
I'm ready. I can't wait.
Watch for that as we dive deep into his golf travel soul to see what other courses across the country and around the world have inspired him. Until then, you know what we're going to say. Rob had a big, big dream. Go run down yours. So long.